If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and bliss and presence of the One Beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Self-Awareness Dawns, and Inner and Outer Violence Ceases Only with the Dissolution of the Mind. Self-Awareness Dawns, and Inner and Outer Violence Cease Only with the Dissolution of the Mind. So let's hold that as our intention tonight. As we call ourselves forward, taking a deep breath, and asking for the anointing and the revelation and the impartation from Divine Spirit that would be appropriate tonight for each one of you. You alone can decide when you want to awaken so much so that you'll rise above the belief that you were ever separate. So let's start with three hues. This will clear the mind and spiritualize it and prepare it for our reception tonight. Take a deep breath. So, to stop the world and get off, to end your suffering, torment, and unhappiness, to end violence within and without, to attain lasting peace, joy, and fulfillment, to experience God and know God as your own divine self, the dissolving of the mind is required. So, I've been wondering why people who have been faithfully following a spiritual practice for so many years, and some for decades, in a majority of cases have yet to experience genuine peace. So many seem to be going through the same anxieties and confusions and questions, the same issues and problems that they probably had before embarking upon the spiritual path in the first place. And I wondered why. I really wanted to know because I really would like to assist as best I can. And in the middle of the night, I awakened. I'd been concerned with some of the things that are going on in the presidential debates and the mean-spiritedness and the attacking and all of that, and squabbles like kindergarten children going at each other, and such immaturity. And I thought, why? Why is it so hard for people to treat one another with respect? Why? What is this? And so I asked Jesus and Sai Baba to show me the solution. Why are people so violent? Why are they so angry? And what's keeping them stuck in these self-created hells? And in the morning, I was sitting and looking at the sky, as I love to do. It was such a deep, rich, Wedgwood blue. And the clouds were just phenomenal. They were so close and so pure white. And then my attention was drawn to a fly that was caught in between the patio screen and the sliding glass door. And so I opened the screen so it could fly free. But no, it was only an inch away from freedom, but it was afraid to cross the edge of the screen door. It felt safer with its feet on the known screen than it would risking the unknown surface of the door edge. And I watched it, and it kept retreating further and further away from the opening into freedom. And I spoke to it, which usually works with animals and insects, but not this fearful fly. It was so close to freedom. But it had to risk letting go of the familiar and the known and to venture into the unknown. And I wondered if we were much different from the fly in our approach to our greater life of freedom beyond the screen of our thoughts. The self we truly are, that immortal, ever-free, blissful self, is so present. But we too hesitate because we cling to the familiar and the known, afraid to venture beyond our conditioning and our belief systems. By the way, the fly finally did find the opening and freed itself, but not until it was almost totally exhausted. So the human being is trapped behind the screen of thought forms. The mind has become attached to the familiar and the known. Just beyond those thoughts, however, is self-awareness, self-realization, and freedom. So once we learn that there are spiritual practices that could take one beyond the mind to self-realization, we usually embark upon some spiritual path. Yet all that any spiritual path can do, really, is quiet the mind. And the quieted mind, however, if you've noticed, soon becomes agitated again as soon as it gets up from the meditation mat and interacts socially. The same anger awaits the slightest provocation to erupt. The same attachments, the same desires and disappointments and appointments and fears and anxieties reappear. And one is in the same condition as before meditating. Why? You know, why? And the reason, I believe, is that most are simply mood-making, as I call it. One is caught up in the mind, imagining soul traveling, for example, or one is following some guided meditation or some channeling. Or one is mocking up and visualizing and trying to manifest. But all of that is mental imagery. It's all at the level of the mind. It's really simply substituting the so-called spiritual imagery for one's customary thinking. But like the fly, the mind simply recreates the familiar and the known and never goes beyond. One is simply playing mind games. And the proof that this is so is the fact that there's no real transformation. There is no stillness and inner peace that endures, at least, maybe momentarily. But I'm talking about that which is a substratum of your mind at all the time. And there's no compassion and no bliss. We don't seem to be more loving and more compassionate, nor truly to experience genuine ananda. So, spirituality, to really qualify for that definition, must bring lasting transformation. And I'm talking about a radical transformation of how one views life. One's entire character must reveal this transformation. It must be evident in how one lives and speaks and treats others. And without this radical transformation, one is simply playing mental games and recycling the known, recycling one's conditioning, one's beliefs and thought forms. And that's what blocks the realization of the self. We stay in that. It's like we're chasing our tail. So to become aware one is doing this is actually the first step in freeing oneself. We do this, but very few people are aware that they are doing that. So to be self-aware requires shifting one's attention beyond the physical body, beyond one's ever-changing moods, emotions, and customary thought forms. And here is where we get stuck. Because nearly every human being takes the physical body to be oneself. Nearly every person believes that they are this physical body with its name, with its physical characteristics, with its feelings and its thoughts. Nearly every person believes the random parade of thoughts, the voice in one's head, is one's own. Well, don't you? You know, the beginning of wisdom is to doubt your own thoughts, your own conclusions about things. Because if they're not supremely blissful, they're simply not true. Truth and bliss are one and the same thing. But few ever question this at all. It's simply taken to be a fact that we're the body, and the thoughts are our thoughts, coming from our mind. Yet that's not one's real identity at all. That is simply the false self. That sense of the body and one's mind and one's thoughts being one's identity is what must be transformed and ultimately dissolved in the light of self-awareness. Awareness is another term for God. Self with a capital S, awareness, God, the inner master, the guru, are all one and the same. No difference. But one's personal self, with all its misery and pain and suffering, must be dissolved in the bliss of the universal self that is the true identity. That's our immortal foreverness. Okay. Say one has become aware of this, at least at some level. At least one has heard this intellectually and may even believe it is so. But intellectual comprehension and self-realization are two very different things. So nearly every person on a conscious spiritual path believes intellectually that they are more than their body, more than their passing emotions and thoughts. But their lies still show no transformation because it's all in their heads. It's a concept in the mind. They believe in it, but no more than that. So we've probably all done this. We've taken our umpteenth workshop that has promised to give us the very secret to attaining whatever. Or we've just gone on another trip to see guru, whoever. We've just read another self-help how-to book. And we get yet another technique to improve our lives. We're excited. This is it. We found it. We tell our friends. We may even practice a technique for a while. Well, some of us do, but most of us don't. But regardless, after about 2 weeks, sometimes less, we are back exactly where we were before. Nothing has changed but our bank balance. And we repeat this scenario over and over, and sometimes it eventually leads to that jaded cynicism that has become so prevalent in the New Age community in particular. So it's common to feel that one has failed, that somehow one is not worthy or evolved enough or whatever enough to get it. But that's not true at all. Look, if self-awareness could be gotten from taking a workshop or visiting gurus or reading a book, there would be self-realized masters popping up every day everywhere. So what gives here? What does it take to become self-aware, self-realized? Well, as we said, you need to become aware of who you are beyond the physical body and the mind, beyond the thoughts you have about yourself, the interpretations you've made about what life is all about, and all of that. And you need to realize that the self that exists is simply present, hidden only by all of those beliefs and assumptions and thought forms. It's there. It doesn't have to be sought. It's nowhere apart from you. It's under your nose. It's between your eyes. It's inside you. It's what's listening to me. It's what's looking out of your eyes onto that book you're reading. It's that intelligence that goes, oh, I got it. That is who you are. That's that God within. So you must know yourself. You must find your own way to do that. And you must walk your own path and complete your own quest. You know, we can't fabricate a life based on someone else's story, someone else's autobiography, someone else's version of the truth. We all are walking scripture. The divine codes of light and love and sound are inscribed in your very DNA, which is part of the DNA of God. So you don't need an outer to validate your own experience. Now, here is where it gets really interesting. You, who you think you are, cannot do this. It's not possible to realize the eternal self with the time-bound mind and the time-limited physical body. There is a divine operator with a capital O that actually must complete your realization. That is where we move into the dimensions of relationship with the divine, where you move nearer and dearer to union with the beloved. You'll have to become the mystic, the lover of God, the one that is immersed like a fish in water in the beloved. And that means you need to love God. How can you love that which you can't see? Good question. You have to find out. I found out how. And I did. And when you long enough, you will be drawn to the beloved. Because every step you take, the beloved takes 1,000 to meet you. And sometimes it's at the point of our deepest despair that we're met. Sometimes we have to get so bottomed out, so over ourselves, so fed up with the daily nonsense that people think of as life. Sometimes we have to be flat on our face. Sometimes figurative, sometimes literally. But at that point of desperation, at that point of deepest despair, I know the moments when I've been in the greatest, pits, depths of despair. For me, it's always been a prelude to a breakthrough to a higher level. There's something about the intensity of the play of the polar opposites of experience that cause that beloved to slip in right between, right through the cracks. We have to give that wiggle room. And sometimes we have to be brought to our knees before we have any wiggle room. Sometimes, like the fly, we have to be close to absolute exhaustion before we just desperately go for the freedom. But I think intensity is very important in our lives. Intensity of your life's experience will catalyze something in you. It's the obstacles. It's the opposing energy. It's the aggravations that somehow seem to birth us into immortal bliss and being. Somehow. So whatever your path is, it's the path that's going to get you home the quickest route. So work it, whatever it is. So as long as you're identifying with a physical body and your mind, it's not possible to free yourself. The body will wear out and die. The mind will keep you confined to the known. And you'll just be playing endless mind games and taking mental trips to nowhere but your own imagination. Now, no one knows this, it seems, but fully God-realized masters and avatars. That's why those are the books we need to read. If we're going to read any books at all, why waste your eyesight on someone who is as lost as you are? Seek out God-realized masters and avatars. Read the books of Satya Sai Baba. One that inspired my talk tonight is called The Teachings of Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Questions and Answers from Summer Showers in Vrindavan, 1990. You can get it at the Satya Sai Book Center in Tustin, California. It's online. And sometimes you can get a lot of books of Sai Baba on Amazon. This one I happened to purchase when I was in India with Baba, so probably you'll need to go to the book center, the Satya Sai Book Center of America, to get it. Now, God-realized masters and avatars are not concerned with your personal struggles because they know that you are, when you're miserable enough and have exhausted yourself physically and mentally, with all the fool's gold that glitters in the world, you will find your own way to awaken beyond. So they hold a space for that. They hold a certainty You know, when we lack certainty, you can be assured that every God-realized master has come by the same path and is certain that you will make it because they made it themselves. They know the way, and they hold that space. Very few God-realized masters are actually available to consult, as they generally live very secluded lives and quietly do their work behind the scenes. I visited Jesus yesterday. I don't have much of a sense of time anymore. And he was quietly working. He had on a long, soft gray kaftan and his Turkish slippers. And I thought how similar we all work. You know, those of us that are the light workers, we all quietly work behind the scenes. We do what we do. We actually don't have a life that resembles that of most people. We're not interested in followers or disciples, and they're not either. They're only interested in seeing you move into your own self-mastery. And it's your own self that must master yourself, for no one can do that for another. But he reminded me, he said, don't project me being in Rome. Don't project me as apart from you, as outside of you somewhere. Know that I dwell in you, as your innermost divine self. And in that we are one. So we get fooled when the masters are in the outer world, when Sai Baba was in the outer world, when Jesus, when Buddha were in the outer world. They all come with what is called Mahamaya, the deluding principle that causes you to think they're in that form only. They're in that ashram in India only. They're in the Himalayas only. They're in Rome or wherever only. And that's the grand illusion. That's why all masters at some point must leave so that we don't keep following. They don't want followers. They want co-workers that stand shoulder to shoulder and serve. That's what they want. So, you will encounter those who are more experienced along the way, who can share what they have been taught by these great masters and avatars, and have come to realize for themselves. And their company is of great value and to be sought. Boy, are you fortunate if you know a person who is further on the path than you are. Wow, is that a blessing. So Baba has this to say, Sai Baba. As long as the mind is there, desires will not leave you. As long as you have desires, the false notion of me and mine will not leave you. As long as the feelings of me and mine is there, the ego will not leave you. There is no other way to attain Atmayana, God realization, but through the annihilation of the mind. The right kinds of spiritual practice are those that are directed toward dissolving the mind. If that is not the objective, if that is the objective to dissolve the mind, you are sure to win success. You should also have firm conviction that nothing happens due to human effort. Self-awareness reveals itself after the dissolution of the mind. When he speaks of, we have to have the conviction that nothing happens due to human effort. Human effort is always trying to do something out of the mind, out of the known. But when you move to that higher level, of what I often call the aware self beyond thought, you move into the dimension of the divine. Just like I told you, not too long after I had taken on this physical body in 1991, I think it was, during the 11/11, whenever that was. After I took on this physical body, one morning I woke up. We had an Ashtar Command Center in Sedona, Arizona. And I had just come back from being in a council meeting where I was surrounded with, I would guess, maybe 12 white-robed, white-bearded beings that all looked very much alike. I was standing in the center. They were seated in a circle around me. And as I turned to each one, they said, "Remember, Athena, you are not human. You are divine." All 12 of them said exactly the same thing in this deep stentorian tone. Because you tend to forget when you get down here from the higher celestial realms, and I came in directly from those realms, you tend to forget because you adopt a human mind that has been conditioned to believe it's the body and that this world is real. So it's a constant bringing your mind back to the truth, bringing your mind back to the truth. Fortunately, I came into a body that had spent many, many years doing 2-3 hours of meditation every day. So it was a very well-trained physical vehicle that I occupied, and a mind that had been trained through many, many years of study, exposure to many great enlightened beings. But nevertheless, when you mix your pure spirit with the mind stuff of this world, you can forget. You can get sleepy. You can go unconscious. The tendency here is to go to sleep. When you go to sleep, you look like you're awake, but nobody's home. You're just kind of on autopilot, which is how the majority of humans on this planet live. So I had to find a lot of different ways to keep myself awake, to keep myself self-realized in the day-to-day moments, the day-to-day activities. So it's an ongoing 24/7 practice that you cultivate this awareness. You keep it foremost and uttermost in your mind. It's the first thought you think of when you awaken. It's the last thought you think of when you go to sleep. When you wake up in the middle of the night, it's the first thought. And throughout the day, you stay just above the actions of the body so that you're the witness. You're watching it all, you're listening to it all, but you're not involved in any of it. There's a curious detachment, like you're watching an actor in a play, but you're not actually in that play. So that's the state that we began to cultivate, because we're meant to be socially active in the world with people. Most of my adult life has been in the world, traveling around the world, teaching, writing, speaking, and counseling with people. Decade after decade, I've been doing that since 1963, with no break. So the last 8-9 years where I've had silence and solitude are really, really a different experience for me. But it's enabled me to share what I've experienced and the keys that I have found through these radio shows. these seminars on BBS Radio, which I'm so grateful for. Because now, you see, that is what I can contribute. Because our lives are what we have to contribute. What else can we give but the richness of our own acquired wisdom, the richness of our own experience, our own revelations, our own creative beauty? We don't have anything else we can share that's authentically ours. So that spirit of divine creativity, never ever think that that is not who you are. Creative intelligence is not the ego. Intelligence itself is God within you. The creative power within you is God. So when we speak about dissolving the mind, annihilating the mind, we're talking about the bundle of misidentifications and conditioning, erroneous false conditioning that has limited you. We're not talking about the brilliance of the divine intelligence within you. That's very different from the mind. Most of us think of the mind as our intelligence. No. Also, the mind is not the brain. The brain is the interpreter of the content of the mind. That's all. The brain sorts things out electrically and transmits the electrical impulses in a way that you can operate on the contents of the mind. So, Sai Baba goes on to say that to realize God is man's foremost task in life. Man must realize God, see God, talk to God. That is realization. True spirituality consists in sowing the seeds of love in the hearts of all people and facilitating the blossoming of peace and divine love among all mankind. Dedicate your mind and body to the loving service of all beings. Recognize the spirit of oneness in all that exists. Do not harbor hatred or even dislike toward anyone. See all as manifestations of the one divine spirit. So that's how we can transform the mind and the body, even while we're still assuming that that's who we are. As we dedicate the mind, we dedicate the body, we dedicate our thoughts and our actions, our words and our deeds to God. And so we serve God in that way. So no one is evil. Everyone essentially is good. It is only the mind that can become distorted and cause us to act out in evil ways. So bear that in mind. Everyone is good at heart, inherently. So let me share from Baba's teachings what exactly the mind is. The mind alone is the cause of all things and their appearances. The whole universe is nothing but a projection of the mind. Everything that we see in the outer has its corollary within the organs and the systems of the human body. We wear, literally, the universes as our form and consciousness combined. The mind, however, when we speak of the ego mind, is a bundle of thought forms. If we have no thoughts, it follows that we have no mind. When we are self-aware, self-realized, we are aware, but the mind is clear of thoughts. We observe, listen, but we don't get involved. personally in the play. So one can act within the play, but without identifying with the scenarios or characters. The mind has four functions or roles that it performs. The first one is manas. The word for man in Sanskrit is manusha. So the word manas comes from manusha. Man is the confluence of mind and spirit. That's what makes a human being. Spirit mixed with mind creates manusha, or man. So manas are the thoughts, the wavering thoughts. I forget how many thousand thoughts we think each day, but they're constantly changing and wavering. The second quality of the mind is buddhi, B-U-D-D-H-I, or intellect. That is the process of inquiry or discrimination between truth and error, or right and wrong. So we have to use our discrimination as we move through life to direct our actions appropriately. And that's the function of the buddhi, or intellect. The third quality of the mind is citta. The citta is the response, the repository of memories, not only in this incarnation, but all of our incarnations. So that's a lot of memory. The fourth quality is ahamkara, or ego. When the mind identifies itself with its physical body and assumes doership, that is what is referred to as the ego. So though the mind is one, it displays these four activities. And again, they are wavering thoughts, intellect, memory, and sense of separate identity and doership, or body consciousness. So, as we meditate and sit in the silence, very important to quiet yourself down. Get some mind space so you can just sit quietly and penetrate beyond your thought. Generally, you'll have to use something to focus on. That's why you're given a mantra, or you focus on a candle flame, or you focus on the sound current that you hear in the center of your head. Or you look at a picture of your guru or your spiritual ideal, or you look at a mandala. It's important to give the mind something to do. Don't try to control it. Don't try to force it not to think. Leave the mind entirely alone. You are not the mind. You stay focused. You can focus on your breath. You can focus on inside your head and your third eye. You can just be with yourself. The mind, let it do what it's going to do. Its nature is to think. So let the thoughts pass like so many clouds. Don't grab them. Don't identify with them. Sometimes teachers tell you to try to trace the thought to its inception. That's a useful technique if it works for you. But the main thing is to keep bringing yourself back to your mantra or to whatever it is that you're focusing upon. One of the techniques Sai Baba gave us was to draw in your mind's eye his form. You know, the afro hair and the face and the orange robe, and you know, or you know, the figure of Christ. It doesn't have to be Sai Baba. It could be any form that you look to as your spiritual ideal. But to try to draw that form in your mind. The Arcane School, when I was studying with the Arcane School, also gave that without defining what the master was, just kind of an ideal form of the inner master. And that's called the meditation of the master in the heart. And then at some point, the master can enter that form and manifest to you. So that's one of many, many, many different techniques that you can use. And I found that rarely does it take more than about 15 minutes at the most before you will transition beyond the mind into soul awareness. You just go into a deep, deep, deep place within yourself, like you drop like a pebble in a lake of serenity. So Sai Baba says that the nations are torn today by strife and indiscipline and violence and chaos because everyone, both young and old, are preoccupied with external things, totally ignoring the spiritual life. And he says that even the entire educational system is riddled with selfishness. Because the whole thing about education today is primarily to make a living in the world, but to acquire material acquisitions for one's own self, usually by any means. So the peace of the individual as well as the world depends upon the mind. We've not been taught how to use the mind correctly, which is to delve and probe and penetrate the abstract, to go deep into the abstract thought processes, to use the mind like a double-edged sword to cleave between the real and the unreal. We've been taught how to memorize and how to repeat what has been memorized. And thus we've added to the ego, but not to our own emancipation. So as a man thinks, so he becomes. That's a fundamental law of manifestation. When you think of something repeatedly, it becomes part of your nature. And then you have that also to overcome if it's been an erroneous concept. So when one realizes that the self-same divine spirit animates all forms, there will be no room for hatred or violence or animosity. And then we will be able to love one another as oneself. So Sai Baba has this to say. The world is full of divisions and squabbles because human qualities are on the decline in today's world. Man has forgotten the divinity in himself and others. Selfishness and self-interest arising out of body consciousness give rise to these attachments and hatreds. The mind is responsible for the false identification of ourselves with the body. When the I, or aham, that is the I am, is entangled with the mind, it becomes ahamkara, or ego. I, free from the mind, is bliss itself. It enables us to recognize the unity of all existence. What is wrong with the spiritual practices that people undertake today is that they're done at the mental level for mental satisfaction, and these are all illusions of the mind. To remove the not-self is to know the self with a capital S, Real sadhana, or spiritual practice, is to establish oneself in the self, or the Atma, forgetting the non-self. All other practices are just mental illusions. So pay attention to whether or not you are actually having transformation. What would it look like? When your life is transformed, you no longer react negatively like you used to. You have a greater openness of heart and love, genuine caring and compassion for other people. You have a deep, deep, bottomless well of serenity within you and peace that nothing that happens on the outer world can disturb. I often say I haven't had a thought in my mind for many years, and that's actually true. I never think. That sounds really strange. But I don't. I just am. I don't even know how to describe it. But the mind is simply empty. It's aware. It's present. I certainly love life. I feel like I'm everywhere at the same time. But no, there's not thought. But, you know, I can remember a time back in the early 70s when my mind was driving me crazy. At the time, in the 70s, I was in Vrindavan, Sai Baba's summer ashram in Whitefield, outside of Bangalore. And I was in a great conflict of loyalty. Should I be loyal to Sai Baba? Should I be loyal to John Roger? Should I be loyal, you know, which one? And I remember I was sitting under that great big banyan tree where you used to sing bhajans all day long on Sunday and Thursdays. I was one of the bhajan leaders. And Sai Baba came out to give us darshan. He would walk around. There was never very many of us in those days, a few hundred. And I said in my mind, Baba, my mind is driving me crazy. Help! And I remember he immediately came to me. And he just walked, you know, an inch or two away from me, or by me, and raised his hand like he does with his upturned palm, making a circle as he often does. And I remember my mind went absolutely empty and still. So the presence of his aura, his power, you see, brought all of the sediment of my mind, my karmas, my subconscious gunk, to the surface, and he just dissolved it through grace. So when he says that nothing depends on human effort, that God himself is the doer within us, what he's meaning to say is that when we give over our lives in absolute surrender, when we cry from the deepest recesses of our being, Lord, save me, Lord, awaken me. Lord, take these thoughts, take this hatred, take this anger, take this craziness, and give me your bliss, give me your peace. Show me the way, guide me. He absolutely, totally does that. But it's, you gotta give the Lord room to inhabit you, to inhabit your mind, to inhabit your thoughts, to inhabit your praises, so that God inhabits our praise, which is another way to say wherever we are in a state of self-giving, of loving God, of expressing our devotion. God is inhabiting that very tendency. So every day when I wake up, I ask that, I don't ask, I say, you are the soul thinker, motivator, speaker, server, lover, indweller, mover of this body, mind, instrument. You are the one that does it all. I of myself do nothing. It is you. It is by your grace that I awaken each day. It's by your grace that anything noble or noteworthy is done. And so it's God's grace that completes us. It's God's grace that wells up in the dissolution of the mind. Only the divine can dissolve illusion. That's why in the Bible it says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. So it's the grace of the Divine Spirit welling up within you that dissolves the mind. And we can ask for that, pray for that, cry for that, beseech God for that. But at some point, we just have to surrender and let that grace, which is greater than anything that's in this world, take full charge and occupy us and the totality of us. And when that happens, everything else dissolves. The things of the world become strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace. And that's why it's so important to love God with all our heart, all our mind, all our soul, all our strength, and our fellow man as ourself. Because there is only that self, and that self is love, and nothing less than that. The world sees differences. The world sees otherness. Grace, the divine self, sees one. And when you see one, there can be no fear. And just as fear is the mother of all violence, all discord, all negativity, we simply dissolve all of that in the eternal love that is, that casts no shadow, that has no otherness at all. So turn your mind to God. Like a sunflower follows the sun. When you eat, eat God. When you drink, drink God. When you touch, touch God. When you make love with God. When you weep, weep for God. When you laugh, laugh with God. But you'll be truly God, when the mind has been dissolved in limitless love. And that's what I would wish for each and every one of us, because we are the promised ones that came at this great point in history to dance the dream awake. We're the rainbow dancers. We're the celestial emissaries. from the divine throne realms. And we're here to be the love of God in action, here and now. So let's conclude with chanting three Shanti. Shanti is the Sanskrit word for peace. And let us send the energy of Shanti, of peace, to all this planet and to ourselves and to everyone. Deep breath. Shanti. Abide in your hearts and in your minds and radiate through your instruments to bless everyone with whom you come in contact. May that be so, according to the highest will and highest good. Namaste.